go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, a brand new week on the horn. It's the 24th day of September 2012. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is what we like to call conversation radio. This is the horn. Head on radionetwork.com. Head on radionetwork.com. A little almost 7 year old. We'd be in second grade now, wouldn't we? An almost 7 year old attempt to redefine the medium, the genre of talk radio, exclusively on the internet and available to you in a wide variety of platforms, whether it be TuneIn Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, and of course, the easiest way, simply going to headonradionetwork.com, clicking listen live, and boom, you're done. The podcasting address is at whiterosesociety.org, where you can get the podcast, or you can also get the podcast at iTunes. So I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. I'm in a fairly decent mood. My beloved Mountaineers survived a pesky Maryland Terrapin squad in a contest at Mountaineer Field, sometimes drenched in rain. They're going to have to get a lot better if they're going to make any kind of a showing in the Big 12, however. Big 12, West Virginia. Doesn't make sense. It's a parking place till we get the invite from the SEC. That's how I think that. Auburn scared the daylights out of LSU. LSU just didn't look like much. What else? How did Kansas State and Oklahoma end up? I had real hopes for that. But no, it was just a nice day of watching college football on Saturday, which is how I define autumn. Well, apart from beautiful days like this, being Monday, naturally, this day dawned beautifully and carried beautifully on and is, wrapping up beautifully as well. Just magnificent skies. Colors aren't exactly, we're beginning to see some hints of the color change coming here in the hills, but it's not gonna really take hold for another week or so, I don't think. So anyway, I hope your weekend was a good one. And I hope you're ready for a nice long week. Well, not long. They all seem to get away from us rather quickly. Friday will be here before we know it. But a nice week of conversation as we head downhill in more ways than one in this filthy political season toward the November election. Early nomination for Moran Monday for Willard Romney. I had a couple of those via email. Operable windows on jets, asks Jugapunch in the chat room. Sheesh. Had fun joining in the, Skype chat post-shows Friday. Those are always a hoot. We had a blast. And, wow, that's an aristocrats-level nasty joke, Lottie, in the chat room. I'm not even going to repeat it. You'll have to go to the chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, And ask Lottie yourself to just ask him to repeat his. Oh my God, that's revolting. Huh. I will quietly share that with Agnes later, and she will chuckle merrily. But I'm not going to share it with the listening audience. It's too much. Ah, well, how about that? Some news from our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs. Hey, Bob, today I found another platform that broadcasts the horn. It's called Streama.com, and so far I'm finding it's a lot like TuneIn, but with more of an emphasis on foreign radio stations. However, I'm also just new to the site and just registered to sign up for free. I then typed in head-on, and it began to play your show, so I guess you can add Streama.com, Streema.com, to your list of platforms that broadcast the head-on radio network. And here's, I tell you, Willard's off to an early start. Since this is Moran Monday, says Kevin, I'd like to nominate Willard Romney for the award in perpetuity. Well, now, at least until the election, at which time I'm hoping he loses and quietly goes into obscurity. In my lifetime, I have never seen such a bad campaign where the candidate suffers from foot-and-mouth disease almost every day, and this should prove to the right wing, but it won't, that Mittens is not fit for the job. Signed, Kevin. And you know what? We may have to retire Willard before the election is over. He's had a very bad, awful, rotten, no good, terrible couple of it's been one of those campaigns. But for the sake of perspective and for the sake of historical memory, how many of us were around at about this time in the year 2000? Come on. Raise your little hands. Yeah, we were. And by about this time in the year 2000, we in our little progressive liberal bubble, or whatever it is we care to call it, how many of us were looking at George W. Bush saying, no way, no freaking way would the people of the United States ever elect a person that godforsaken dumb to the presidency of the United States? And I will also remind you that we were right, because the American people did not elect a man that was that godforsaken dumb to the presidency of the United States. Two things happened. One, West Virginia broke with tradition and gave our five little paltry pissant electoral votes we gave to George W. Dim Son, Dim Leader, as Malloy likes to call him, Raisin Brain. God, I love that name. Bush. I chuckle every time he says Raisin Brain. It's like Bart Kopp's joke about the name of Bristol Palin's kid. Trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnson. There's some stuff in this world that's just funny. Flapjack. Oh, I love that. Every now and then I send a note to Bart saying, you know, you really created something special there, Bart. I forget who it was. I saw somebody lifting the term flapjack the other day for a BS name. Somebody's reading Barca. But no, I simply remind you, we felt the way many of us feel about Bishop Willard Romney. We felt that way about George W. Bush, and we wound up with 8 years of him. Don't let up. If you are inclined to work for the Obama campaign or to urge people to vote for President Obama, then don't let up and make any assumptions that this thing is won, because it ain't. Repiglicans will scratch and fight and claw and scam and scram and steal until the very end. And remember, there are voter ID laws in place. There's video game voting. There's dummied up, dodged up, faked up, phonied up, rubed up, frauded up scanners out there. Yeah. Nothing is safe until it is safe. And nothing will be safe until the election is over. Early nominee coming. Well, let's get this started. Let's do this right.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Step right up. Right over here. Right over here. Don't go for the cotton candy. Don't go to the candy apples. Right over this way. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Step behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, and there you will hear right-wing Morans of all stripes, the dangerous ones, the goofy ones, the mean ones, the hateful ones, the absolutely crazy ones, and the stupid ones. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. You can't tell your Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Women are advised to keep close hands upon their bags, men with their hands upon their wallets, and children kept safely in tow. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes of Moran Monday. Remember, this all costs you less than 5 cents per hour of programming. A thin, thin nickel just to witness this kind of moranity. Head for the hills, friends, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans.
Oh, Lord, yes. Marty with a nominee early on. Paul Ryan, how many Repiglicans can go before the AARP and get booed lustfully? I didn't know they did it that way. How about lustily? Vigorously. Robustly. But they did it all. Including some get the out of here's. You're crazies. Who do you think you're trying to fool, Buster? You know, some I was born at nights, not last nights. No, really, we'll take your Social Security and send you a month's supply every month of cat food, and you'll like it. So, yeah, I agree with the nomination of Paul Ryan. But I think Willard is an early leader. Yeah, sure. Did you catch the Thursday night? I didn't see it until the weekend. Did you catch the Thursday night, Saturday Night Live sketches about Willard? Pretty funny. Especially the send-up of Fox News. By the way, we have that nominee for you this evening as well. Ted Koppel showed up on O'Reilly, and our buddy Isaac shared that clip with me today via Twitter. And it was a beauty. Ted Koppel, and it really doesn't... I could play you the audio, but the audio really doesn't capture the essence of this clip. Because at the end of the clip, I don't know, does it come across on the microphone? Ted Koppel does something to Bill O'Reilly that must have sent O'Reilly off stage screaming, "We'll do it live! Effing!" I mean, he must have been reaching for the falafel big time. And it's just... So we've got that nominee. I mean, that, of course, I don't know. O'Reilly? Really? Because O'Reilly's a past master of morality, right? No, for me, sometimes I prefer my morans to come from the everyday walks of life. It's easy to be a moran when you're born to it, and when when you've got some sort of a national spotlight. It is a different story altogether, however, when you're just living the moran life, not in the spotlight, but just going from day to day, week to week. And in this particular case, a couple of stories. One tragic, one exceedingly sad. Another is just mean and stupid. Another just stupid. And then, well, this. Just, that's all there is to say, is this. A story coming out of where else? Texas. It's the story of a girl, appears to be bright and smart. Her name is Taylor Santos. And she goes to school at Springtown High School near Fort Worth, Texas. Apparently, she was accused of allowing another student to copy her classwork. Now, later in life, collaboration with coworkers will be deemed valuable. But in the authoritarian halls of a public school in Texas, at copying, that's a mortal sin right up there with denying Christ. She's an athlete, Taylor is. She's got good grades. Her grades really matter to her. So when she got caught a-letting somebody a copying of her work, they gived her a choice there in Texas. She could either spend 2 days of in-school suspension, or she could take a beating. Yes, yes, I know. Here on the 24th day of September 2012, the second decade of the 21st century in the greatest country in the world, we still beat children in school. Now, in most of America, we've managed to get away from the idea of beating children, you know, beating knowledge into them. Yeah, the only way them little youngins hear is through their Botox. But 19 states still permit students to be beaten at school, including Wyoming, North Carolina, Louisiana, and of course Texas. But at least in Texas, parents can exempt their children from being beaten. I don't know if, but if you want to exempt your child from at-school beatings, then you have to affirmatively write a letter to the school every year. That, of course, will brand your child as a troublemaker for you not wanting your kid to be beaten. So, young Miss Taylor Santos was offered the choice between being beaten and having a two-day in-school suspension. She opted for the beating, and they called her mama, Anna Jorgensen. And Taylor explained to her mama that she didn't want to miss any classes because her grades are really important to her. So she'd just take the beating. And Ms. Jorgensen said, well, if Taylor's okay with it, I guess I am too. Because, see, they've got a rule that says that female children will be beaten by adult females and male children will be beaten by adult males in Texas. That passes for humane treatment in that state. But there at Springtown High School, well, rules are for sissies when it comes to beating pretty little things. So instead, the vice principal, a man, while being watched by another man, proceeded to beat Taylor Santos. It was supposed to be, a female watched while the vice principal delivered the beating.
Yeah, let me beat this here little filly. After I get done with her, I don't reckon she'll want to be a sitting down long enough to let anybody copy off of her papers anymore.
And apparently Mr. Vice Principal enjoyed it. We don't know the particulars of, we don't know if she had to bend over his lap or if she leaned against the wall. But we do know that young Miss Santos was hit so hard that her backside was turned fire engine red. And according to her mother, who took photographs as evidence, her buttocks looked as if they had been burned and blistered.
Oh, little lady, what'd you think? A paddling was supposed to be fun? Do you think I was just going to give her a little love tap? No, by God, we're going to beat her till she don't want to let nobody copy off of her no more.
And apparently this same male vice principal has a pattern. Another child whose mother is Kathy Watt said her student, her daughter, Jada, got a little mouthy with that same assistant vice principal. And he and another male give little Jada what for. You reckon these two big, strong men deliver paddlings to, say, a 220-pound, say, tailback at the high school from the football team? Mm-mm, I don't think so. I think they're just sent to, I'd reckon they're probably just sent to that there in-school detention. Kathy Watt said she was not expecting to see her daughter's backside bruised. She said a swat is a swat. Yes, it is, and they do sting, but to bruise a child, if I'd done that, they would have called CPS on me, Child Protective Services. Two men giving her a swat behind closed doors, that's creepy, Kathy said. It is interesting that the Supreme Court of the United States has had the opportunity to outrule the beating of young students in public schools,
but chose not to, ruling instead that beating children is legal unless it's been abolished by local authorities. Because we gotta have some deference here for states' rights.
Huh. Let's see, we had another thing. Wasn't there something in our history involving deference for state rights that involved the legality of beating another demographic group of human beings? Why, yes! Yeah, I'll be damned, yes, there was.
So that's our first Moran Monday nominee. This unnamed sadistic jackass at Springtown High School near Fort Worth, Texas, that ditches the rules.
Because females are supposed to administer the beatings to young females, and males are...
No, by God, I want to make sure that this ain't no little sissy paddling. I want to make sure she... You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe he's a devotee of the works of the Dr. James Dobson, who advises that children should be beaten until they cry real tears. Maybe she was beat in the name of Jesus, hallelujah.
Ron and Raleigh in the spirit of things. Hey, Bob, how about for a bumper, how about a few bars of Beat Me Daddy 8 to the Bar? Sadistic school administrators using their power to abuse the young people in their charge. Maybe they would be better employed in the prison system.
I'll go one step further, Ron. Maybe he would be better in the prison system.
Jim noting that Texas educational policy appears to be very, very like the British Navy of the 1800s, rum, sodomy, and the lash policy. Well, there are parts of Texas that are still mired in the 19th century.
You know, they beat the school children at the Alamo, and they're some of the best school children ever had.
I agree, Texas Betsy. Not Moran. Asshole. Sadist. How old is Taylor? I can't tell you, but she is at Springtown High School. I've got a photograph of her. I would say she's probably a ninth grader or a tenth grader. She's merely referred to as a well-regarded student and athlete. She doesn't have that weird, world-weary look of the high school senior about her. Of course, I could be wrong. Texas Betsy, who is an educator, a professional educator, in the state of Texas, hence the nickname. She said, beating? I teach my students the difference between coaching and copying. Beating? Oi. What the... But she was given a choice. She could have took the 2-day in-school suspension. But they've apparently been successful in teaching her the value of class attendance and the value of maintaining good grades. So that's our nominee from the ordinary day-to-day world. Pity we don't have a name. Neither Jorgensen nor the vice principal, unnamed, nor Springtown ISD Superintendent Mike Kelly was available for comment from for ABC News.
According to WFAA, however, Kelly is going to ask the school board to abolish the same-gender policy, since adhering to it can be difficult on some campuses. Really? Really? Oh, that's the punchline! Here we've got a full-grown male laying a beating on the backside of a teenage girl, and the response to it by the school district is to say, we need to make it possible for more adult males to lay beatings on the backsides of young girls. I don't think they're getting the message. Taylor's mama said, I think Taylor is proof that we need to keep that same gender policy. I don't believe a man intentionally meant to do that to her, but it still happens because men are too big and strong to be hitting 96-pound girls. Yeah, but sometimes, well, if Jesus wills it. The day, this is another good, the day after her daughter's paddling, Ms. Jorgensen called the vice principal to complain, but was told it was, quote, normal for her bottom to look like this after receiving swats. Notice the euphemisms. These aren't swats, these aren't spankings, these are beatings. Beatings. And the, you know, the question remains, can you beat an education into a child? And if you can, then one would think, and I will leave this to the more mathematically and statistically inclined members of the Horn family to sort this one out. If it is possible to beat knowledge into a child via their backsides, wouldn't you expect then that the schools where beatings are administered would have the highest standardized test scores in the United States? I mean, I presume, for instance, that let's say Massachusetts and California, Oregon, Washington, Wisconsin, maybe Maine, Vermont. Let's say they don't beat their students into an education. Wouldn't one expect then to see lower test scores than, say, the test scores of the schools where children receive beatings, like Texas? And see, because the state law of Texas allows students to have knowledge beaten into their backsides, you can't do anything about it unless the force is excessive. And this is another one of those moments. I don't know what I'd do. I don't know what I'd do. If my daughter came home and said she had been beaten at school by a full-grown man cloaked in the authority of an educator. How must the rest of the world look at us? There's that question again. How must they look at us? Japan? Australia? Germany? UK? Sweden? Norway? France? Italy? Greece?
how does it look to you? What do you think when you hear stories about how America beats an education into their children? Well, true enough, Lottie. Chat room moderator Lottie noting, they already look at us that way, Bob. We're barbarians, aren't we? We are a bunch of knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, drooling, barbarian freaks. The child should have been taken, but I'm not going to put myself in the place of this parent. But she probably should have been seen in a hospital. Because if she shows those photographs of her child's beaten bottom, you know, some Texas Ranger will show up on her doorstep saying, "Ma'am, Vice Principal over to Stringtown High School done told me you got some pictures of child pornography here, and you've been a photographing your teenage daughter's bottom. Let's go down to the station so we can get prints and pictures and get you all booked up right and proper, ma'am." Marty noting, "I know one of the things I'd be suing for if I'm that girl's father, along with a sizable chunk of his take-home." Yeah, let's all stand up and sing, "If tomorrow all... at least I could know I can still beat my children and my wife. And I thank my lucky stars that I live in America." Yeah. Because I'm proud to be an American where at least we beat our kids. That's a start for Moran Monday, wouldn't you say? And then, you know, there's I guess we would just call this a general nomination for Moran Monday. Just nominating the GOP in general for their advice to America's uninsured, which includes, you know, me and my family. Yeah, this is real special. Don't have health insurance? Well, Willard says, that the solution is easy if we have a problem. And of course, he's just repeating some silly crap that he's heard somewhere else. Scott Pelley interviewed him on 60 Minutes yesterday. He asked him, Pelley did, "Does the government have a responsibility to provide health care to the 50 million Americans who don't have it today?" And Bishop Willard Romney answered, "Well, we do provide care for people who don't have insurance, people. If someone has a heart attack, they don't sit in their apartment and die. We pick them up in an ambulance and take them to the hospital and give them care." Give. "And different states have different ways of providing for that care." Pelley, "That's the most expensive way to do it, in an emergency room." Willard, "Different. Again, different states have different ways of doing that. Some provide that care through clinics. Some provide the care through emergency rooms. In my state, we found a solution that worked for my state. But I wouldn't take what we did in Massachusetts and say to Texas, you've got to take the Massachusetts model." Did you catch that? If someone has a heart attack, they don't sit in their apartment and die. Don't they, Willard? Don't they? Why don't you roll down the window there on your jet and holler out and ask member of the filthy, greasy, no good, layabout 47%, what happens? Because, you know, they do lay around and they do sit in their apartment and die. You'll notice it's their apartment, it's not their house.
I tried that go to the emergency room trick. I've got a $15,000 bill hanging over my head that I don't have the first freaking clue how to pay, except, I don't know, drop them a bag of hickory nuts on the porch of the ER every month for working on and you know, get some lawyer to work on my entailment.
Howdy, Mr. Cunningham.
So, in Bishop Willard's world, there's just a clinic around the corner for when there's a crisis. I mean, I'm not holding myself out as some sort of poster child or anything like that, but the fact of the matter is, this is reality for me, for Agnes, and for the kids. This is America. Agnes needs to go to the doctor to get the meds that manage her endocrine condition. She can't go. Can't afford it. And this is not a plea. This is not begging. This is just if I'm telling you about this, then sort of imagine this replicated hundreds of times worse, millions of times over across the United States. It just happens that I have a microphone so that I can tell you about it, so it'll have a little bit of, perhaps a little bit more visceral reality. I am of Northern European extraction with a little itty-bitty drop of Native American this and maybe some Germanic that, but mostly Scots, Irish, and via that route, ultimately, and then some English, you know, Friesland, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, you know, the Norse lands. And I guess it takes a few thousand years to evolve away from something like this, but I'm a cholesterol factory. And a triglyceride factory. And those things come in handy if you live somewhere that it's freezing freaking cold, where you've got 11 months of frozen ground and 1 month of bad sledding. It's good to be able to manufacture fat. Easily. But in the 21st century, it's not such a good idea. And so I take a medication that deals not so much with my cholesterol, but with my triglycerides. Because, I mean, I'm a triglyceride freaking machine. That's why I had to give up mainlining jars of Cheese Whiz a few years back. Oh, Guy James laughed merrily at me for that. What? No more IV Velveeta, Bob? Yeah. So, the cheapest I've found is to get that script refilled for about $75 a month. Well, it ain't happening. Because we choose between things like feeding the family and getting medicine. Between doctor's appointments and getting and putting food on the family. Because those are the choices that America's working poor make. That America's working class make. I'm done talking about upper class and middle class and lower class because the definitions are all entirely too fluid. I think it was mentioned on this program the other night, I think maybe it was Sandra who said, yeah, but everybody thinks they're middle class. Well, we ain't. I personally think that upper, middle, lower thing was invented as a means of diverting our attentions from reality. Because there are only two classes of people in this world. Them that work and them that don't. And by don't work, I don't mean somebody who can't get a job. I mean the Willard Romneys of the world. Bishop Willard Romney, God knows how long it's been since Bishop Willard Romney actually worked up a sweat, and I'm not counting the treadmill or the stair stepper or the elliptical or the Nordic ski machine or any of that bullshit our 1% bettors use to keep from having the fat just settle around them because they are a bunch of doulas pricks. Talking about work. Hauling in the groceries, even. Pushing a lawnmower, even. Bishop Willard is so important that he's got people who do that. Well, we do provide care for people who don't have insurance. People if someone has a heart attack, they don't sit in their apartment and die. How long will it take for websites to begin proliferating the stories of people who did, in fact, sit in their apartments and die? But we're not real. We aren't real to Bishop Willard. Email coming in from Peter. Woman dies wrongful death after arrest in emergency room. This is from April 2nd, 2012. Imagine going to the one place you think you can get help no matter what your situation and you're arrested. A homeless woman died last week after being arrested for refusing to leave an emergency room. The woman suffered from a blood clot that went to her lungs after going to the hospital with a sprained ankle. She was in so much pain she refused to leave, so hospital staff had her arrested. She later died in a jail cell. Her needs were ignored. She knew something was still wrong, but doctors at the hospital refused to listen. The hospital then said in a statement that sometimes blood tests that could have diagnosed her condition aren't always accurate. More tests could have been done to ensure her condition was treated. Jesus. But see, she didn't sit in her apartment and die. She went to the emergency room and got arrested and died in jail. Welcome to America. Ain't it grand? With two question marks in the subject line, Sandra writing in, huh? Are you really talking about school-sanctioned beating of kids? Yes. In Texas. And this was a little white girl. Imagine what happens if you're of color. They probably give you the beating and then call INS to make sure that you're legally in the school system. Let's see, what city was that emergency room in? Asks Randy. Where'd the story go? Don't know. But it's from April 2012. You can probably find it. In the chat room, VT Native says, sad story, poor woman. It's on the police video, her dying in agony. Oh, hey, wow. Fellow hillbilly in the house. From over at the Malloy chat room, Sam in West Virginia has wandered in. Welcome to the room, Sam. It's more and Monday. Ron writing, come on, Bob. You know the bishop probably hasn't hit a lick at a snake since he left for college. I'm sure George Romney gave that sorry swine chores to do as a teenager. by the way, P.S., says Ron, if the bishop becomes president, they'll be stacking them up like cordwood outside the ERs. Yeah, I'm sure we'll have an ER, crisis, but, well, we've already got one, I mean, really. But, you know, just go to the damned emergency room, will you? Quit bitching. And when you get that bill, when you get that $15,000 bill for something not quite 72 hours in the emergency room, just thank God that it was that cheap. You know, mortgage that cardboard box you live in over the subway grate or something. Why don't you? But remember, if you have that heart attack and you decide not to die in the apartment, not the house, the apartment, and you do get picked up in an ambulance and taken to the hospital, just remember that the law says all they have to do is stabilize you. They don't have to, you don't get the bypass or the stenting that you need. You just get stabilized so you can go home and die in your sleep, maybe. Because, you know, those pig lickings, they're compassionate. They don't want you thrashing around and dying in front of people and making a big scene in an emergency room or anything. What did Alan Grayson say? Die. Die quickly. One gets the sense that we will be right busy this evening. This Moran Monday on the Horn. From Minnesota to South Carolina, we have stories. News Ninja Gene sent me a fun one from Idaho. Headline, Idaho wildfire roars through former uranium mine site. This via Reuters. A wildfire in east-central Idaho has burned through three former mining sites containing traces of radioactive thorium and uranium and was advanced on a fourth such site on Thursday. But, and this is from Friday's, this is a story from this past Friday, but, and here's one of those fun, this is one of those places where you don't use the world's most dangerous English word, but state officials said they believed the risk to human health was low. There they go believing again. And they believe that angels can dance on the head of a pin. And they believe, you know, it's Idaho, so they believe if Bishop Willard Romney is elected president, that a wave of pious holiness will sweep the nation, and that'll make sure that nobody dies in their apartment of a heart attack or thrashing around the floor of an emergency. They just believe in. But even though they believe that, Idaho environmental authorities will take air samples in North Fork. That's a small community in the fire zone north of Salmon, Idaho, to assess any radioactive hazards posed by fire damage to the sites. One of the sites that's of concern is 5 miles west of North Fork, Idaho. It's a defunct uranium mine and milling operation. It was cleaned up by you and me, the taxpayers, via that job-killing U.S. Environmental Protection Agency a few years back. The soil was polluted. There were hazardous wastes laying around, and piles of raw uranium and thorium ore just sort of scattered around. They never performed any sort of decontamination of the buildings at the mine site. And here's the fun part. One of those non-decontaminated buildings burned up in the fire. Flames also swept two abandoned gold mines in about 20 miles west of North Fork, where surface radiation, presumably from natural uranium, all natural, and thorium deposits in the ground were burned up. Radiation levels have been measured at several times normal background levels at that site. The air testing comes as the threat of property losses in communities near the so-called Mustang Complex fire has receded. Well, property losses. That's the concern. Property losses. Not life losses.
property losses. Idaho environmental officials said smoke pollution, which has blanketed the area for more than a month, is the more pressing hazard than the radiation. They're telling residents to stay inside and wear masks when they're outside. This is very unhealthy air. We're well beyond the point where it just affects the young and the elderly. It affects all age groups and all degrees of health, said Mike Simon, acting air quality administrator for Idaho. Jesus. Morons. Thank you, Ray. If Willard is elected, they will have to put screen doors on Air Force One. Oh, thank you, Peter. The woman who died in jail of the blood clot was in St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you. In answer to Randy's question. Well, there goes the hour's filibuster. Filibobster. And now it's your turn. Jump on in if you have a thought or a nominee for this Moran Monday. You know how to reach the program, right? Area code 304-658-3333 is the direct dial line. If you need us to carry the freight toll-free, it's 877-443-2366. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. We will be back momentarily. This is Conversation Radio on America's home of liberal progressive conversation. This is The Horn. Yep.
Thinking ahead means preparing
thinking
for
ahead
the future.
Means preparing for the future.
The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy, a minute past the hour on this Moran Monday edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I was going to put up the link to the story from Texas in the chat room, but I'm getting zero cooperation from Java. Not at all surprising. Sorry about that, y'all. And I can't make the damn thing. Come on. What a pity. With regard to the spanking story, Betsy noting, Bob, this is abuse. They did not beat values or education into Taylor. They taught her fear and pain and violence. They abused her, and I'm sure they alienated her from school. When I get home tonight, I'm looking up whether my new district is this barbaric. If so, I will deal with discipline in my own classroom, where having to read at your desk instead of on the carpet is considered cruel and unusual. There, you know, there's ways of dealing with this, and there's an expert. Truly, there is an expert example of it from a genuine expert educator. Oh, what we got to do is go and beat some sense into them. You know, spare the 2x4 and spoil the child. Spare the paddling, spoil the fun, if you know what I mean. Yeah, come on in here, Leroy. We're going to give her a good one. Light her up. Here that man has no business being around children. Glad you liked it, Isaac. Over on Twitter, hiding. Bob's jamming with the old school funk. Sounds damn good to me. Yeah, that was James Brown and the Spank. Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Hey, light them up. Line's open if you want to jump in for this Moran Monday conversation or nominations or whatever's moving you. Hey, welcome to the program.
Anything that comes out of the ground, I'm now referring to as obtainium. Everything.
Everything is obtainium.
That's it. That's the one lesson I took from Avatar, people. Obtainium.
I agree.
So much crazy happening. You got the whole thing with the political campaigns. So many people making stupid mistakes. But I did want to make a correction, and I think it's important because I believe the story was what I would refer to as reckless journalism. You're talking about that game, that video game, Hail to the Chimp.
Yeah.
And the person who put that out, they did what I would call lazy journalism. They didn't research it carefully. The game was published in 2008. It was created in 2006. So unless these people had a DeLorean, I wouldn't call it racist. What I would say, though, is if you look and research it, the game is based on an episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the re-release and the remarketing that's troubling, Dave.
Well, that may be, but
because you would think after four years of of chimp jokes, and especially that editorial cartoon that shows a chimpanzee gunned down. That was what was that? The New York Post or the Daily News? Or I forget which. That was clearly meant to be a stand-in for President Obama. That maybe those that you know maybe that's just out of bounds now.
Well, the thing is that you know a lot of people just pick up these games for cheap with the publishers, and they just release them. The money to be made. They may find.
Yeah, it's just you mean the tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business.
Yeah, I mean it's basically that they just pick up these. It's referred to as shovelware. They have so many games, they just put it out, they have to put it out. They have to meet their quota. And that's what I talk about, you know, when people tell me about, this is what I talk about on the subject of art. When people get into a serious conversation about art, you need to realize something. That art that you want, that art that you want, you're going to have to pay a price for it. And no, I'm not talking about your dollars. What I'm talking about is they're going to have to shovel out lots and lots and lots of crap for that to be financed.
Yeah, true. True.
And I mean, but a lot of people don't understand that. They just go off on a tangent and don't understand the fact that all of this stuff has a price. And I'm not talking financial price. I'm talking literal. Someone has to be in the trenches making crap so someone can make a statement of art, whether it's a movie, whether it's music. Go through the film studios, people. Go through your music collection. Everything has, I mean, so many bands. I guess you could say they made generic shit so we could have the finest shit. That's the way I look at it.
Well, in this particular case, the story first came to my attention because Ferg was playing a game one day.
Right.
And you know, online advertising or in-game advertising or whatever you want to call it. Dad, look at this! And, you know, it's 2012. We're in the middle of a presidential election, and there's Hail to the Chimp.
Right. Well, I actually backtracked the story, and I went back to... They put out the story before, and one of the developers commented on the blog, and he said... I hate to inform you guys, but this is how the game was created, and this is the idea that we had, and I mean, it was the same type of it's the same type of gesture. What I'm saying is when you go into a story, when someone puts a story out like that, you can't, if you're just doing it because you're having a slow news day, I understand that, but there are consequences of people. If that game somehow blew up and was a big game. And the fact is that it wasn't racist. It looks pretty bad. And the sad thing is they don't apologize if they make that mistake. And they say, oh, well, it didn't turn out to be racist. There's no apology. There's just move on to the next story.
Well, that's the perpetual news cycle, isn't it, David?
Yeah.
And, of course, I guess what, speaking of video games, I guess the new DOA comes out today. You know, another hot babes doing kung fu kind of. You know, it's no back when I was a young whippersnapper. You know, all we had were sexy album covers. Now it's full on into the video game realm, and I'm not going to bust out all Hillary Clinton and think, you know, talk about how they're, you know, ruining the minds of our children or anything, but.
Yeah.
Ron and Raleigh said, tell David, I've been saying the hard to impossible to find parts for my 22-year-old VW Corrado are made of unobtainium.
There you go.
Wow, man. Ron, you've got a 22-year-old Corrado? That's not... You know what the Corrado is, David?
I've not heard of the Corrado, no.
Way back in the day, I had a buddy who had a Porsche 911.
Okay.
And his wife had a Corrado. And the Corrado would blow the doors off that Porsche any day of the week. Corners, straightaways, didn't matter. Car was smoking. So, but the thing is, I bet the parts are hard to find.
So, yeah, and they probably are made of unobtainium.
Yeah.
Anything you can't find and badly need.
There's unobtainium and there's obtainium. Obtainium is the cheaper stuff.
Right, and, under the rubric of obtainium, we might, for instance, go to this story that I have from mydigitalfc.com, India's first global business networking platform, Financial Chronicle. Gangs of Indian prospectors are coming to the hillbillies. Because coal is obtainium.
Oh, yeah.
The International Coal Ventures, a consortium of five leading steel and mining public sector undertakings, has set its eyes on the Virginia coal fields in America. And I'm guessing since this was written in India, it's probably includes us, too. But, no, they've been talking to right-wing Virginia Commonwealth Governor Bob McDonnell. Wasn't he a graduate of, Pat Robertson University or something? A team of government officials headed by Steel Secretary D.R.S. Chaudhry and Steel Authority of India Chairman C.S. Verma will be leaving for U.S. on Saturday to evaluate the mines. This is this past Saturday. So they're coming over here because they want something, because don't make any mistakes. This isn't coal that's going to be coming out of underground mines. This is coal that's going to be coming out of blown-up mountains. With an aim to own 500 million tons of coal reserves by 2019-2020, ICVL was incorporated in 2009 as a joint venture between SAIL, RINL, CIL, NMDC, and NTPC, MOUSE, with the mandate of securing overseas coking coal and thermal coal assets. So as long as the government will permit them here, the coal is no longer going to keep our lights on. Coal is going to go to India.
And it's going to definitely keep their lights on and pollute their skies. And
in the meantime, it'll poison our communities until we get the AIC Act passed.
Yeah, and, you just segued into that.
Well, I figured I'd try to get the jump on you since you're yeah. Usually the one that's prodding me.
There you go. Please tell them what the AIC Act's all about.
The AIC Act is about ending the Appalachian healthcare disaster. What it basically does, you can go to AIICact.org and find out all about it. But what it does, in essence, is it puts a moratorium on new mountaintop removal permits and forbids the expansion of old ones. So that during that period of time, fully funded U.S. government health studies have to be pursued, so that we can find out why it is that all these studies are out there that show that living near a mountaintop removal community is literally, it's past being hazardous to your health, it's downright toxic. So that's what the AIC Act does, and of course, in order to get the AIC Act passed, we need people calling their elected representatives, emailing them, asking them to sign on. And we've got a couple that are near and dear to our hearts right now, folks like Jackie Speer in California, Frank Pallone in New Jersey, Ed Markey in Massachusetts that we would like to see on. I'd love to see Tammy Baldwin sign on from the House side, and maybe if she can win her Senate race in Wisconsin, maybe she'd be a great Senate ally for us. But we can do that if people are willing to help do that. The other thing we're asking folks to do is to make a sign that says, I support the AIC Act, and stand in front of your state house or your representative's local office or whatever. Get your friends together. If you go to a meeting or anything, get a picture taken. Send it to me. Send it to us. And then you can also send it to your elected representative and say, look, we're serious. We mean this. Neat idea, huh?
Yeah, that is a neat idea. You could create like a mosaic of all the people around the United States.
Right.
It's good to see that there's a lot of movement regarding this, and a lot of people are still interested.
Well, they are, and it's going to the work will continue, even though now that the Repiglicans have let out for recess, they're out on the playground. They won't be back until I think November the 13th. So all of the elected representatives are campaigning in their home districts right now. This is an awesome opportunity for folks to call the local office and say, "Hey, get on board." Folks like Representative Dix and Representative McDermott in Washington, folks like Representative Baldwin in Wisconsin, on and on and on. I mean, there's a list of who has signed on as co-sponsors at ACAC.org, and if your representative isn't on there, get after them. If they are on there, write them a thank you note. I think it's because, you know, this is not an academic exercise, David.
Right.
This is something that is designed to succeed. No one has ever put forward a bill in the Congress that would end mountaintop removal before. No one. Ever. And we're not doing this for our health. Well, I mean, we are.
Right.
But we're not doing this because we live these lives of indolent boredom. And we're just cause junkies looking for something to believe in. This is being done because there is a real, live, full-blown, no-kidding crisis in this region. West Virginia. West Virginia is the only state in the Union that is entirely encompassed by the Appalachian Mountains. But West Virginia, Southwest Virginia, places like Wise County, Virginia, places like Harlan County, Kentucky, places, and over toward Inez, Kentucky. 30% of Inez, Kentucky is gone. 45% of Wise County, Virginia is gone. Okay? That's Martin County, Kentucky, by the way, where our good friend Mickey lives. Northeast Tennessee. You know, and everywhere you look, people are sick and dying. And between the direct stuff, the cancers, the heart disease, the endocrine disorders, and then the non-indirect stuff like the plague of narcotics, so-called prescription narcotics that is just burning up our communities. What it boils down to is they are slowly depopulating the region, and that ain't an accident.
I can imagine it's not.
So the best way to get active and get busy, two things. One, go to ACAC.org, and the other, go to CRMW.net, which is the home of Coal River Mountain Watch. And you really want to show your colors, order a Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirt from Coal River Mountain Watch. It is one of the coolest t-shirts. I mean, I don't care. There are people in the Horn family that have these t-shirts, and I guarantee they'll tell you. Anywhere you wear it, it's a conversation starter. And you get to tell people about what's going on back here. And when people find out, they're horrified. And when they're horrified, they take action.
And the hashtag on that is ACACT?
That's what I've been using. Although I think there's another, I think there's an actual Twitter account, and I can't remember what the Twitter account is. I need to start tweeting at that so it will then in turn retweet.
I'm sure if you just search the,
Well, it's at, you can find it at ACACT.org.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like plenty of information that people can digest and get to. I did want to mention the when you were talking about the having another 2,000, that's been on my mind a lot in terms of the new rulings from state to state regarding voter restrictions. And I just wonder... how close do you think they are of taking this election if we just ignore the polls and all of that? How close do you think they are to this election with a candidate like Romney of taking this?
I don't believe in putting anything in the win column until the clock has run down to zero.
Right.
And with that in mind. Again, you know, look, we most all of us went through the 2000 election. We heard the election called for Al Gore. And then we saw that cutaway shot to the governor's office in Texas where Jeb Bush or somewhere and where Jeb Bush was sitting there looking at W, and W was going, "What the?" And Jeb was just shaking his head no, letting him know the fix is in.
Wouldn't that be crazy if Romney's team did a reversal of that, and Obama gets a second term, and everything that we were saying in 2000, they decide to use disingenuously, of course, that this election was stolen and so forth.
Oh, I think. But the thing is, it's going to be hard for them to do that because they're the ones pressing for the voter disenfranchisement laws. Now, I expect them to squeal, voter fraud, voter fraud. But, Jesus, there's only been, what, 13 cases in 10 years? Of actual verifiable somebody trying to vote twice? Or vote the dead or anything like that? I mean, so they're going to be hard-pressed to do that. But they've been setting up that trope for a long time, David.
That's a serious epidemic with the 13 cases. We need some hardcore investigation. Got to get Kenneth Starr involved.
Yeah, maybe we need to spend $70 million. What's Ken Starr doing these days?
So you think Election Day, because I'm reading a lot of the pundits, and here's something that I noticed. Every week, Romney has lost this election. Every week. But it's almost like these writers are constantly doing this on purpose.
Well, sure they are. The for-profit media have to create this impression of the horse race.
But I mean, even the genuine and sincere ones, where there's constantly, well, Romney's lost this one. And it's like, well, you said that last week.
But you know, people like Peggy Nooner.
Yeah.
When she says the stuff she says... I mean, I imagine the bishop's wife just wants to throttle Peggy Nooner. So, you know, things like, what did she say? It's an embarrassment?
Right.
But there's, you know, there's a reason. Along the same route, David, as the reason we don't have publicly financed political campaigns.
Right.
Well, it's not necessarily that the politicians don't want to quit being out there grubbing around for money like sex workers. It's that the big media companies, the for-profit media, this is at the least every 2 years, and then there's a huge windfall every 4 years where they get this massive windfall of cash. Now, why would you ever, if you ran one of those for-profit media companies, why would you ever get out there and advocate for clean elections?
Oh, you wouldn't.
Right. You're not gonna go out there and say, I'm tired of these. I mean, how many billions are going to be put into this campaign this year?
Regarding conversation and discussion of this, but. Do you think it would be they're pushing hard. A lot of people wanted to get Gary Johnson in on the debates.
Well, when I heard her talking out in Madison a week ago last Saturday, Jill Stein was very serious about wanting in on the debates. And I'm of two minds on that, frankly, and
yeah.
I'll probably get hate mail for this. On the one hand, I probably agree with something on the order of 99.9% of everything Jill Stein says.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is by far the most progressive candidate. She also does not have a rat's chance in hell of winning, and never did, and never will.
Yeah, there definitely is that. I mean, when I listen to... I listened to her speech at the Fighting Bob Fest, and the one thing that I just kept coming across was the fact that, you know, we keep putting these candidates up that are too good to have, that kind of mentality.
Well, no, right. The point is a candidate for imperial administrator, which is what the presidency is.
Mm-hmm.
Is never going to be conducive, at least in my lifetime, I don't think, nor yours.
Right.
to that kind of political philosophy. Unless there is a complete and wholesale sea change in the entire nature of our body politic. So I mean, I'm certainly not putting her down. I'm not dismissing her, because her ideas are good ideas, and I want those ideas to be advanced by a core of dedicated progressive people inside one of the two parties that can actually win the presidency.
Well, you know, that's the reason why I vote Democrat, and why I voted for Obama, and why I voted for I just vote for what makes the most sense politically to me as a person on this planet. Now, when people say, you know, I've had this come across, they say, "Well, you're just voting, you're just voting for a political party that's the same." No, it's not the same, and we have a clear indication of a lot of areas where it is not the same. Now, the problem is that a lot of progressives, and hear me out there, this is true, they don't want to face those painful compromises, but you got to face them. You have to face them. You can't pretend that they're not going to come your way, because they are.
Well, there are some places where you stick to your guns, but you know, the vast majority of the history of this country is a history of political compromise. The problem is that right now we have a Republican Party that is absolutely hell-bent on ideological purity, such that compromise... I mean, who's the candidate out there in Indiana? I despise him. He's a right-wing just turd on two legs. That says that, you know, his idea of compromise is when the Democrats capitulate and give in. And unfortunately, the Democratic Party has been very, very good at that. I mean, look at all the stuff we gave in on during the two terms of Dim Sun.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's out. We're good at that. And I don't, you know, when was the last time Republicans compromised on something? Really compromised?
It's been a while.
I mean, they did compromise on the veterans' jobs bill in the Senate last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were even allowed to write in what they insisted be in the bill. And then they killed it. Unemployment among veterans returning from Afghanistan and Iraq is in excess of 11%. And the Republicans, who were allowed to collaborate in the Senate on the rewrite of the bill, then turned around and killed it just because they didn't want that one in our White House to have a political victory this close to the election. How much more do we need to know about the GOP?
I think that pretty much...
I mean, that bill failed 58 votes to 40 votes. In other words, the rules of the Senate were once again turned on their head so that 58 to 40 is no longer a majority. It could not pass the cloture motion.
And you know what's sad is probably no one on conservative talk radio who claims to be pro-military or any of that would dare voice their opinion on a national radio show.
Oh, hell yes, they did.
No. I mean, voice their opinion against what the GOP did. Is what I'm saying.
Oh no. They won't. No, they wouldn't cross that line. I mean, that's they have messaging discipline that would make the Marine Corps. They have discipline within the Republican Party that would make the Marine Corps look like a bunch of anarchists. Okay, they really do. And no, nobody's going to cross that line. And the sad thing is, that bill should put paid forevermore to any notion that the right wing and the Republican Party gives a rat's rear end about our warriors, as they like to call them. Because they don't. They don't care about them when they get hurt. They don't care about them when they come home and need a job. They don't care. You know, you've got Lindsey Graham out there over the weekend saying, well, you know, if I was Romney, what I would do is I would say that I'm going to keep our troops in Afghanistan, by God. And we're not going to tell them when we're going to leave. One day they'll just look up and we'll be gone, but we're not going to tell them we're going to leave in 2014. Hell, we might not leave till 2100.
You know, it's amazing how...
Riding around on that lion through Narnia.
It's amazing how this works in the Republican Party through the military, how so many families still support.
Well, then that's the next question. You know, are military families of vets who have come home from these nightmares in the sand, are they saying, oh, no, we didn't need a job. That was just one of them boondoggle liberal giveaways. We don't need a job. We can live on our patriotism.
You see, I think part of it is it's like the complete master of psychology in a sense, because they really do understand how to inject that myth underneath the skin and get it into the bloodstream. So everyone is just juiced up on it. I've seen it. You know, I've witnessed it. My dad's friends, they constantly say, Obama's a communist. I'll give you this real quick story. One of my dad's friends is one of the 1%, a billionaire, and he travels all around the world. And the funny thing is he's drunk off his ass all the time. He comes into town, and he convinces my family, because they're old family friends, you know how that goes. He just got lucky with some dealerships, and because of the tax issues, ba-bang, he's an instant billionaire, you know? So... he comes into town, literally, Bob. I'm not kidding you. He'll pester my parents. He'll be like, you gotta come out and visit. We're gonna have some fun. And just constantly on that type of thing. And he'll put up $5,000. Not kidding you, $5,000 a night for a hotel room. They'll come out, and he'll go on a tangent about why he doesn't want to pay too much taxes. And my parents are sitting there looking at him like, you got to be kidding me. And my mom is actually one of the people who loves to debate. She has to literally pinch my dad's leg, because that's how rabid he is when it comes to the whole tax issues and what's happened in this country. And the fact that this guy is so comatose in a drunk state, he has no idea how good he has it. When I say good people, I say this guy flies to Dubai, Paris, you name it. I mean, he carries an entourage with him. The tax situation really set him up really, really lovely. And it's still amazing to me, no matter what they get, Bob, it goes back to they want it all. They want it all. No matter what, there's something that just completely is bringing America down. It's those goddamn Democrats. You're living in the lap of luxury, and you're actually spending time with my family in a great setting where... you're living in the last days of your life, and you literally are getting mad at this. Give me a goddamn break.
And yet, you know, I have conversations with folks down south who are just ordinary working stiffs, and they want to explain the economy to me as if, I mean, I joke about not being an economist and everything, but I'm not a total doofus when it comes to economics.
Right.
They want to explain to me, you know, we're living beyond our means, and we're putting debt on the credit card for our grandchildren to pay. And it just doesn't work for me anymore, David, because they were silent as the tomb for the 8 long miserable years of the Dimstone administration, when most of that money went on the damn credit card. Well, you know, that's the same crowd to say, we got to fight them over there. Well, else we'll have to fight them over here, and they'll be, just our Walmarts will be smoking heaps of rubble from that 6-foot-6-inch tall Saudi terrorist with the portable dialysis machine. You're going to blow them all up. We ain't going to have no Walmarts no more.
You know, it's that repetitive message. It reminds me, I just read that, Mitt Romney article in the Rolling Stone, Matt Taibbi. And the one thing that I took away from it, I was like, these guys are the ultimate slickster bastards that you just couldn't make up. I mean, even Gordon Gekko would say, are you kidding me? That shit won't work. I mean, when I was reading about what they did to one of the particular things with Bain Capital and Romney, I always wondered what happened.
Yeah, Bain Consulting got a huge bailout from the government.
Right.
Bishop Willard has been sucking on the federal teat since he got pulled off his mama's.
And you know, one of the stores they brought down that I used to shop regularly was, they explain it in depth in this article. And for those people who haven't read it, you should just check it out and just get to some of the details. But one of the details they had was that they actually brought a bankruptcy. And I used to go in that store all the time for, like, video games and toys and so forth. But they brought the bankruptcy to the KB toy store chain.
Oh, hell yes.
They left them with the... They left him with this extraordinary goddamn bill, and they were talking in the article. They go back to talk to one of the founders or one of the executive sale representatives or something like that, and he just basically explained it point blank what they did, and it's like.
Well, the funny thing is, you can't find anybody out there in any of these companies that that Bain the parasite and Bishop Willard the head parasite. Landed on, you can't find anybody out there who wasn't part of the paid-off management structure who says, you know what, this was good for me. Losing my job, having it outsourced overseas, having my mortgage go bust, having my house foreclosed on, living in a little shitbox apartment now, that was good for me. That taught me character is what that did.
You know, the funny thing about it is that it's that constant mantra, and they explain it in the article. They say it's not wealth that they create, it's debt that they create everywhere.
Yeah.
Constant debt. And the fact that we're so mesmerized as a public, whenever they say create wealth, we don't think of that type of scenario. Like, no, they're not creating wealth, they're creating debt for everyone. And If you are going to go around on the TV and say you create wealth, you should have to physically prove it step by step.
Yeah, but you can't do that because then you have to open up the Cayman Islands and Swiss bank accounts, and then, well, that's just another whole mess. Hey, David, I got to roll along, but this has been a great conversation, my friend.
All right, Bob, you take a good, have a good one.
All right, we'll see you. Later. Bye now. David calling from Maine, the land of cheap lobster. You heard that right. Lobsters, yeah, the price of the lobster's falling through the floor because the water's so damn warm up there that, well, there's a glut. There's a glut. Now, yeah, market, yeah, just market economics. Had a note in from Kate in regard to the Idaho fires. She said, we've been suffering from the Salmon Idaho fires clear over here in Helena, Montana. Visibility is often less than 10 blocks. Then you add in a 30-mile-an-hour wind. Hoo-wee, says Kate. Now we have to contend with the smoke being polluted by all those toxic heavy metals. Think I'll just sit here in my apartment with the windows shut, of course. Emergency room is completely out of the question for most folks. Damn, the bishop is so fill-in-the-blank. Yeah. We could have the bishop is so fill in the blank contest this evening for this Moran Monday. Everybody, you want to fill in your blank? Damn, the bishop is so, and just to the email, and we'll be right there. A note coming in from Randy. He said, by the way, Bob, time for a horn beat the Swede appeal for the last $100. We're about $100 away from meeting September's fundraising goal. And at which point we will beat the Swede. $100 does it. And if you look at I had a couple of emails over the weekend. Bob, did we double the? No, we didn't. You'll see a great big number on the bar there for the horn fundraising. That's because I got my last ever paycheck, and I put it in there to cover bills that have to be covered. And there you have it. But we're about $100 from beating the Swede. So if you want to, if you can help close that gap, we'll announce the Swede has been beaten, and the Swede will be a very happy beaten Swede. He usually runs about a day behind on the podcast. Scott does, but that's where we stand, about $100 away from finishing off September's fundraising goal, which, as noted, is not actually what it takes to keep everything going here, because, well, it ain't. Onward to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Mitt Romney is so orange.
Yes, he is, Brother Albert.
I think it's from his dives into his pool of gold.
I mean, he was approaching Oompa Loompa, Albert.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, he's an Oompa Loompa. What kind of Oompa Loompa is that?
The bishop is so Oompa Loompa. Okay, let's get it started.
No, Oompa Loompas are good. Oompa Loompas are like the henchmen of the goddess of Ireland.
Yeah, they're sort of agents of morality.
Yeah, they're watching at all times. Even if you can't see them, they're still watching you, them Oompas. And Mitt Romney's trying to be an Oompa, but he ain't no Oompa. And everything's going against them. You know this. That's why he's orange.
Yes,
I mean,
indeed.
The mask is off.
Or on, depending on how you want to look at it. Did you hear that he threw a tantrum before that Univision appearance?
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Because he didn't like the introduction that he got, because they said,
yeah, they made him...
Bishop Romney has agreed to give us 30 minutes of his time. We'll be hearing next from President Obama, who's given us an hour. And I mean, he turned purple through the orange in his makeup backstage, we're being told. And then he threw he made them retape the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Before he would come out on stage, they introduced him, and he wouldn't walk out. I mean...
The new model. This is just a new model of the Romney Bot Collab 144K. in spring, the Negro edition arrives.
No!
And, well, yeah, I mean, because they can only update the firmware. See, their batteries don't last too long. And they're real far up their anus cavity, which where they don't, they're just robots, so they don't have that. But where that would be, it's real far up, and you know. And plus, you got to remember, you know, the Colombian programmers, you know, they have all their intelligence on America and English and language, you know, from the 50s. That's when they set their first scout mission. So then they're not going to update it that fast, even when the fall edition arrives and the spring edition. I mean, no wonder. I mean, you know, the head robotic maintenance officer, Ann Romney, she's frayed. She can't handle it. I mean, if you think it's so easy to keep this thing running, then you get up here. You know? You think it's easy to keep that shade of orange on this thing? They got the Teflon coat on it. I got to friggin' scrape it down with sandpaper. That's why it disappears. Because it's getting worked on. It's just amazing.
Get the Dremel out and... With that gooseneck arm so you can get into the little tight corners.
Extending little... It's just relentless. And, you know, it's like India can come over to, you know, West Virginia and get coal, try to buy up coal. What, 2018, huh? Oh, yeah, 2018. Now, I know I'm a record, broken record. This is, you know, in terms of investment business information... You know, the Citigroup and a bunch of other, BP, you know, they've done their studies. Saudi Arabia. Have I told you this already?
I don't think so.
Saudi Arabia will stop being an exporter of oil by 2030.
That's what you would call soon.
I mean, you know, now I've given this information out to you. Oh, we got plenty of time. Plenty of what? Plenty of who? Oh, don't worry, we'll find...
Oh, the little Keebler elves are working away in their abiotic oil factory.
Yeah. Well, what about the Anwar? We gotta open up the Anwar. The Anwar, right? It has 11 billion barrels. Ooh, that's 6 months of what we consumed in 2002. But Albert, they're more efficient. We're gonna get 60 barrels of the gallon. But Saudi Arabia... is over the peak now. It's over. There is not going to be no heavy ship fuel to ship any coal anywhere. The world's going to get a lot more local at the same time. We're literally stepping into a first-class civilization. You know, we have the Internet, you know, and it's just basically in its infant stages. We're starting to see the geothermal potential beneath our feet. You know, and while, yeah, we're saying it on the horn, and I hope everyone starts repeating it, you know. I mean, we don't want to see open geothermal. We want to see closed units where the essentially the heat electrodes or the heat cathodes, whatever you would want to, I don't know how it works in terms of thermodynamics, but in terms of an electric, you know, procedure, it would be the cathode, you know, it would be, but basically we're sending down heat sinks into the earth where we need to boil up some water that's already locked up in a vacuum, right, just like in your computer, and it can start boiling that water and spinning turbines. This is how much of it? 1 year. 1 year, and I know I'm a broken record, I'm apologizing, but you got to have this. You got to know this. 1 year of what is emitted from under our feet in the continental United States would meet the energy needs for the human species for 30,000 years, and it just keeps getting replenished. If we run out of geothermal heat, we are done, period. But we're running out of oil now. The addiction where we're injecting toilet water into our veins and a McDonald's restroom, that's now. When we start blowing up mountains, scraping up, 10 acres of land to its moonscape for, one barrel of oil?
Yeah, you're talking about the tar sands goo?
Yeah, that's what they think is going to fit the bill. Like, don't you understand how, speaking of these economic goofuses, if we don't invest in this next level of energy and infrastructure, well, what do you think is going to happen to the economy when oil goes to $2.50 a barrel? Because, you know, that tar sand stuff, it's only really, you know, financially viable at $1.40, $1.20. Oh, we improved the efficiency. You're wrong. You're wrong, Albert. It's $107 a barrel. Oh, okay. It's over.
Yeah, let's fight.
Let's split atoms on this one. I mean, we're stepping into this new age. I mean, what's this big, right? With the big environmental news lately, right? The polar ice cap, the ice that's usually there year-round, we've never seen that. But that's what the real point of it is. Yes, true, the extent of the ice was, you know, lower than we had ever observed. But the ice that comes back year after year after year, that's actually that year-long stuff, is really what is disappearing. And that's what's really kind of scary about this whole thing.
Well, which, just a matter of curiosity while we're talking about Arctic sea ice and so forth, which freezes faster, fresh water or salt water? I'm just asking.
Well,
because, I mean, you know, we put salt on the roads to make the ice melt, so wouldn't that mean salt water freezes more slowly?
You would think a little bit. It has to be really, really cold, and it has to be really really just so cold that those molecules squeeze that sodium chloride out of it and the rest of the minerals. It squeezes it out and traps, of course, gases, which when we... that's that science stuff. Forget that. What are we talking, science? Get Jesus and his dinosaur up here. What are we talking, science?
Yeah, because it's funny. If science gives us evolution, science is godless Satanism. But if science explains to us that, you know, there's just not a lot of oil left, then science is just wrong.
Yeah, because Jesus is milking dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Sorry about the snort.
No, that's okay. I've got this visual of Jesus with his little three-legged milking stool walking up to a brontosaur. There you go, Bessie.
That's a male. No, anyway,
Oh, that's Uriah.
this is why I'm so hopeful. You know, I mean, the thing is we just need to, you know, keep projecting this vision. You know, see this stuff. You know, we can pull, just like a heating element collects calcium. We can do that same process with the atmosphere. We can actually capture the carbon that we need as a resource, you know, in a sick way, just like you think, you know, when you have, you know, coal stacks that are shooting out all these minerals and, you know, these rare earths and all this other stuff, but it's just smoke, it's garbage. But when we really should be capturing that arsenic because it has industrial uses and we can use it in a contained environment, for better than it is coming out of a smokestack contained, and we can use this stuff. You know, this stuff has uses. It's a raw material. You know, you guys talk about the AIC Act. Well, I'll tell you what, one of the things that we have to deal with here locally is we are one of the best suppliers in the world here in Wisconsin for fracking sand. So the people around here are fighting it. And, you know, this is, you know, I'm sorry, Ron Johnson, the guy who replaced Feingold, oh, he sucks. But he's not even, this guy sucks. He's just, he's not listening. He doesn't get it. He's a billionaire.
No, you have to get Elizabethan. He sucketh.
He sucketh. He thou sucketh. Indeed. Indeed, good sir.
Forsooth.
Oh. You know, and you know, I tell you, I watched the...
Forsooth, he doth suck in a mighty way.
Immensely. And, you know, so we're trying to fight that because I don't want, you know, that's one thing that bothers me about President Obama, is he keeps talking this stupid bullshit about fracking and stuff. And, you know, I don't want, you know, stop listening to the commercials. You know, stop listening to those commercials. Remember, you know, like you and David were talking about, you know, they're the ones that set the prices, right? Right, well, now watch. How much would I bet once President Obama, may peace be upon him, because, you know, he is a holy prophet, isn't he?
Not
president, not sure, right?
Kenyan Muslim.
Kenyan Muslim, right? You know, I was saying the Hussein, not the Bill Hicks and George Carlin prophet.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. So, you know, sometimes our analogies get all scrambled. But anyway, so, you know, this guy sitting here, you know when he, you know, once he wins, you know it's going to be, this next election is going to be $2 trillion. You know, and essentially what that's the network saying, telling these politicians what you need to raise. Right? Now, we all know that Mitt Romney, well, he actually hasn't been doing so good with the money. But, you know, because he's not getting any support from any individuals at all. You know, unless you're, you know, Sheldon Adelson or setting $50,000. Who the hell sits at $50,000 plate? Who? Say what? Are you crazy? $50,000 for a plate of food? To listen to that?
For $50,000, I want Lark's Vomit canapes and hummingbird tongue and, you know, the stuff like that. Yeah. But, you know, no, but, I mean, do you know what you get at the $50,000 dinner?
Chicken or fish.
Chicken or fish.
Chicken or fish. We got a nice prime rib.
No, there's no nice prime rib. No, hell no. And the macaroni and cheese is out of a damn box. No. See, and I brought up macaroni and cheese, Albert, because I had a wonderful little experience in Madison. Saturday night after, we went to this local establishment there called the Avenue Bar.
Okay.
My hosts for the weekend took me, and I had God's, you know, when God orders macaroni and cheese, they bring it to him from the kitchens of the Avenue Bar. And I will never again say that the South is the home of, you know, Southern, F Southern hospitality. I experienced hospitality in Wisconsin. I'm in love with the place. I have a travel crush on Wisconsin now. I just do. So I've told this variation of this story before. I am a firm believer of telling people when they do stuff right.
Yep.
You know, I don't just bitch and, you know, dear Campbell's soup, how dare you put high fructose corn syrup and a fly in my tomato soup? You know, it's not just that, Brother Albert. I like to tell people when they've done things that just spoke to my soul. So I fired off a little letter to the folks at the Avenue Bar, just telling them what a wonderful evening we had and told them what I had. I had a schnitzel that would make Germans faint with delight. And they were, this will piss off the meat eaters in the non-meat eaters in the audience. They were bigger than the damn plate, and there was two of them. I mean, it said schnitzel, so I assumed, because I think the German for two schnitzels is schnitzeln. You know, you got to make that weird thing with your tongue and your nose, with an L and an N for it to be two. But no, it was two giant schnitzels and a bowl of macaroni and cheese. And, you know, you're thinking, this ain't high-flying, you know, this ain't high-flying. Yes, it was. This was macaroni and cheese that was raised to gourmet elegance. And bless their hearts. I mean, this is a restaurant group. I mean, they've got a reputation to protect and stuff. They sent me the recipe for their macaroni and cheese. Little hillbilly me. And they said, by the way, will you send us your mailing address? We'd like to send you an Avenue Bar T-shirt and an Avenue Bar beer glass, so you, as a memento of something you enjoyed so much. Screw Southern hospitality. No, there's a lock in the upper Midwest,
And the reason I mention all that is, you know, the Wisconsin cheese heads and everything. Mm. No. They take it seriously. I mean, this was religious stuff.
Well, you know, I got to be honest, you know. I think this is, you know, there's people. I don't want to stereotype, you know. I don't want to stereotype good. I don't want to limit good. I think it's everywhere. You know, New York, man, New York.
But I found a higher concentration of it.
Yeah, but, you know, just like that, you'll have the, he's a goddamn Muslim. You know, it happens.
Yeah, I guess I've been a little bit, I've traveled in a bit of a bubble, Brother Albert, because I happen to be in the company of good progressive people, as I have every time I've been there.
It's like going to Amsterdam, you know, you're just like, what? It's like that. You come from the United States, you come into a place, you know, and you're
you're not, as they say around here, you're not from around there either. You know, you're not born and raised upper Midwest. And, you know, there's a reason you're there.
True.
I've got the painting that Jenny sent me, and it's hanging on the wall here of the sand hills, and I just sit there and look at it for minutes on end, and I can just feel my blood pressure going down.
There you go.
And it's just, oh, it's nice.
It is. It's a nice place. It's got really good people in it. It's, you know, it's just like everywhere else, though. I mean, you know, I got to be honest. One of the reasons, you know, is nice to live, you know, it's affordable to live here. It's not, you know, New York, I didn't want to run that rat race. And, you know, and I'm glad I didn't. And I'm glad I'm not there. And I'm glad I am where I am. And, you know, I mean, I think, there's a simple aspect to this. And I think the worst part is when they try to run this same race here when they don't really have to, and you know, it's almost like losing a bit of the magic when they try to be New York, or they try to, you know, what they think is New York, not really what New York is, because what New York is, it's the same, you know.
I mean, we had a cab driver in Madison who was a semi-retired mechanical engineer,
mm-hmm.
you know, graduate of UW, worked out in the real world of highfalutin engineering, and moved the heck back to Madison when it was time to quit. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason. I mean, you're in California. You know, why wouldn't you just California, for Christ's sakes? Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Loaded up the truck and...
Yeah. you know, and everywhere, yeah, I don't know. Everyone's got their nuances, I guess. But I don't know. You know, when we're looking at this election and what direction we're faced with, you know, I just got to bring it back to that, because we are all in this together no matter what. You know, I think the difference between us and, if I can say them, is we care about them too.
Yeah.
And.
Well, no, it's like what Reverbo said. You know, we're standing there idling the bus with the door open. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, get on the bus. Plenty of room.
Come on.
Going into the future.
Going there. You're going to take me to a UN FEMA death camp. Oh, God. Oh, oh. You know,
yeah, you're not tricking me into getting on. You know, no, but they're more than willing to be tricked onto the starship for Kolob. You know, and here we are running around. No, we translated their book to serve man. It's a cookbook.
Yeah, for real. And and that's what the beauty of, you know, Mitt Romney's little thing was. You know, I've said it before, I'll tell you again. He was in China relaying a friendly story about him buying a sweatshop. The man pioneered outsourcing. The man was the sole shareholder of Bain. He wasn't just I work there.
No, he was not some working guy.
No, you work there. You own it, the whole thing. You're part owners of the other one as well. I mean, so...
Yeah, it's not like when he got done at the end of the day, he had to get the Kirby out of the closet and vacuum the carpet.
Oh, he worked. He's scrubbing them toilets. I mean, he just disqualified with his release of this tax nonsense that he's just going to redo anyway. With his release of this, he disqualifies himself in his own words.
Yeah, because he overpaid.
Well, no, because he's the other model of the Romney bot. They, you know, they can't get the firmware. They're not the best programmers. So they're just, you know, they don't understand the word gay. They don't know if it means homosexual or,
or lighthearted and happy, or right.
They don't get it, you know. They don't understand any of this stuff, and this is why we're seeing such, you know, just dissonance with this guy.
I mean, oh, by the way, I had an email in from Michael. He said the Romney bot is very like an Apple iPhone. No user accessible batteries.
Exactly. You don't want anybody.
You go after the battery, you avoid the warranty.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And you do not, you know, you do not want to jailbreak a Romney bot.
No. Forget it. Yeah, what did he say? We said, we have details coming out of our eyes. My whole comment, the first comment was, yeah, in infrared blips. Like a remote control, you know, beep, 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 beep. Have you ever seen a remote control on a camera? It shows you the flash of light.
Yeah.
I'm a dork, but
an infrared blips and everybody's car alarm goes off.
Yeah. Viper armed. Why does this thing keep going off? We're all in this. Whatever he's gonna. I like Obamacare. I will kill Obamacare.
I am the grandfather of Obamacare.
I am. Oh, we need. I know how to create jobs. Yeah, do you? Okay, that's. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the beautiful thing. You know, Bubba did. You know, lay that. That's a slaying line right there.
I mean, my God. You know, to take any of the robots from any of the science fiction movies that have entered our popular consciousness, R2-D2, C-3PO, the guy on Buck Rogers that was going, me. Yeah, those are all advanced robotic life forms compared to the Romney bot.
Oh, big time. Big time.
Data?
Yeah, looks like.
Data,
yeah.
From Next Generation?
Yeah.
You know.
This is
Union Sung's, this is the thing that Union Sung put together with his little Union Sung 5-year, you know, the robotic erector set when he was 5 years old. I mean, it's got two left feet and no thumbs. But that sober up moment comes. You know, we have our fun and we talk. I just love the idea of being within 100 yards of Willard Romney and having my car alarm go off.
Details.
Yeah, but we're gonna roll down the windows on the jet. Jesus.
Yeah, what was that? That's another one. What was that? Come on now. What is that? Wait a second. What? What are you talking about, you fool?
Well, but, you know, the things like depressurization don't matter for things that don't breathe air.
Yeah, it's like, what was it in the Star Trek movie with Data, or the first one, or first, whatever the one that was, not first kind, the other one, when they, you know, when they had to go help those people, that advanced people that renounced their space travel. And he goes in, oh, no, don't worry, he doesn't need to breathe. That's Romney. That's why it doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter if it...
But all kidding aside, there's something... I mean, really? I mean, are there 45... What's 45... How many voters are there? Okay, there's 330 million Americans.
Mm-hmm.
How many voters are there typically eligible?
56% of eligible voters voted in 2008. And that's been the highest we've seen since the 60s, but in the 60s there were half less people. So
now figure out what 40 or 45 or 47%.
Yeah.
Of that, and they're not gonna walk. They're not gonna drag their heels. They're gonna run to the polls to vote for Bishop Willard Romney because, you know, we gotta have some value, you know, because he's gonna put God in the public square.
Yeah. Nah, they're demoralized. You know, their fact shields aren't as, you know, as advanced as the Romney bots is. So, you know, the common Republican, they're demoralized. They have nothing to say. They don't have a single fact. A single fact. And I could just launch F words in front of that because it needs to be. Facts on anything. Impervious. They are so exhausted with repelling facts. You know, not pledge is an electrostatic repulsor, you know, oh, pledge, and you don't have to pledge less, you know. It still wears out, and it's the same thing with them. Then they're going to forget to vote. By the time, if the brain drain continues the way it's going, they're just, be in the zoos. You know what I mean? How can you? What is it about this guy? Tell me one thing. You know, I can see. Obama.
Yeah, but you've got Scott Walker and Tim Johnson, man. Take it. Careful, brother Albert.
Oh no! What's the big problem here? Is apathy?
Or Ron Johnson,
right? Ron Johnson, whatever his name is. Yeah, I don't even know what his name is anymore. Just Johnson, jerk. Anyway, this guy, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. What we need is an invigorated base. So President Obama, I got problems with him. Everyone does. But he's a heck of a lot better than that guy. And I can't think of a single reason. You know, I got a ton of reasons to vote for Obama and a few reasons to kind of not vote for him. But I can't think of a single reason to vote Romney. And, you know, to speak about the Green Party, you know, I was all for it, you know. I mean, and let's, you know, Al Gore kind of did win the election. He kind of did get it, you know, pulled out from under him, and he was kind of a dull candidate. And who didn't want to see
Joseph,
Ralph Nader have the
Joseph Lieberman, two words, Joseph Lieberman.
Yeah, I mean, and in all actuality, when you look back at it, how much different would that have been from Romney, from Cheney Bush, you know? I don't know. Maybe we would have had some better.
Well, my money says 9/11 wouldn't have happened, but you know.
True. Yeah, that's because they wouldn't have ignored it. You know, like we all know now. With we only had the August 6th PDB, and I keep hearing people say that, but then they didn't read.
They didn't read 6 months of PDBs.
So and all kinds of real it was averted or. You know, like they did avert something. There was like, oh, it sounds like on standby. They're going to hit us later. Yeah, whatever. You know, so these guys.
And still, in 2012, Albert, still, there are Republicans out there saying George Bush kept us safe from terrorist attacks. You know, except for that one.
I mean, and how did he keep us safe? I mean, I'll tell you, I know the drone strikes are unpopular, and I know this one gets, this gets friction up in any community, but it's not 500,000 to 1.5 million. It's not troops. You know, it's not good. I'm not saying it isn't, but that's not brains, and that's not what the Bush years were. You know, they had rivers of blood. Do you remember those pictures? I mean, it was just ridiculous, you know? I think that what he's using in terms of...
A million. It was by Halloween of 2004.
Mm-hmm.
We had a million Iraqi innocent civilian dead.
Yep. And that isn't just from us. Because we got to get the nuance in it. That also, that just counts for people that wouldn't have died. You know, they shouldn't have died. Other than the fact that we were there, we destroyed their water supply, destroyed their electricity. They got,
Well, yeah, those were excess deaths, and I've learned a lot about excess deaths.
Yeah.
Because we've got the studies out about mountaintop removal that say that in mountaintop removal communities in West Virginia, we have 4,000 excess deaths a year.
You see, your mercury levels are too low, Brother Bob. You've been thinking too much. Sorry.
Yeah, I know.
But the whole thing's coming. Goddess of irony is, it's going to be, it could be either that we still have that bus going, and we have some sort of outlet for it, because that's what's going to happen. It has to happen. It literally has to happen. We have no choice. I think it's good. That's part of being a first-class civilization, right? Is when you control when you gain the power of the planet. And what else would be gaining the power of the planet? I mean, goodness gracious, I've heard that stupid, why don't they put air conditioners up there? Well, geothermal would provide us with so much energy, we freaking could. That's the thing you got to kind of, what? Yeah, we could. We literally could. That's how much excess energy we're going to have out of geothermal. More than coal could ever imagine, right? And it's cheaper. It's cheaper than a coal power plant, and it provides the power of 200 to 1. How can we not go down that path? Coal's a dead end. Gas is 100 years, they say.
Literally, a dead end.
It's a dead end. We don't have 18 years. We have right now. That's what we have right now. Solar panels on every roof. Put these miners to work putting solar panels up, windmills up. What, you're a miner, you can't drill down 6 kilometers? Try to do it as straight as you possibly can? You can't do that? Come on, you could do that. Everybody can do that. And actually, for West Virginia, you guys have the mountains. You might have to go down 15 kilometers. But you still could do it. You know, and it still would be, I mean, everybody can do it. Wind, solar, geothermal, backbone. You know, we can have earth batteries, you know, common earth batteries. We don't even need rare earths anymore. You know, that's where we're getting to when we get to carbon. It just, graphene, we're just so dang close to it that I guess I don't want to hear anybody echo that kind of stuff, that kind of bullshit from the bubble of, oh, we got enough gas to last 100 years. 100 years, right? Well, what happened 100 years ago? I was watching the PBS about the Civil War and America's Dead, and I saw how, you know, that catastrophe, that war, changed how we started to look at the citizens. I mean, not just, you know, I mean, because once you start acknowledging the dead as almost, you know, their sacrifice is doing something, well, that gives us as living a little more rights, doesn't it? You know, and that's the thing. Progress is contagious. And I think we could really, we get a little bit of progress, right? Get your friends to vote, get your mom to vote, get your everybody you know to vote for one man and one man. Who else we got? President,
you know what? I saw my very first, and this is significant here in West Virginia. Maybe it means something because I'm in a fairly rural area, Brother Albert. But I saw my very first Obama sign this weekend.
There we go.
So I know there's at least one more not stupid around here.
Brother Bob, I haven't seen a single Romney yard sign, not one.
You know what? There's one goober that we take a little shortcut to get out to the four lane, and there's one little goober that still has his Ron Paul 2012 sign out in the yard. Yeah, we drove by, Ferg saw it and went, "What kind of Neo Maxi Zoom dweeby is that?"
Yeah, we have them, and you know what? Good on them.
Gotta get back to the gold standard, don't you know?
Yeah, but and it is true. But the thing is because they don't have all their nuts and bolts securely fastened, they're the left wing of the Republican Party. We can still use reason enough, and they like to pretend they believe in that, in logic and reason and facts. So they are less impervious to it as just the Tea Party. I'm a Tea Partyist. You know, I'm American. He's not American. He wasn't born here. Yeah, they don't quite go that route.
I was born in Michigan, and nobody ever asked to see my birth certificate. Haw, 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 yuck, 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 yuck.
And that demoralizes those people. When, you know, anybody who likes to pretend that they're a Republican, you know, based on, well, heck.
Well, you know, this whole election would be a whole lot easier if I looked like a Mexican.
True. But that's the party of today. A lot of these people that are Republicans are historic Republicans, where they, you know, because let's be honest, you know, they didn't have the worst platform besides some of the racist stuff. I mean, you know, this and this and that. It's, you know, it's easy on the ear, you know, and it's easy for people, oh, I like my rights and I like my responsibility and I like thinking that I did this and did that. And those are these historic Republicans, you know? And, you know, they always have Lincoln to point to, even though Lincoln wouldn't be.
Caught dead near the Republican Party. Yeah.
But then they also forget that the Republican.
You know, there's two things. There's two things Lincoln would not be caught dead near, were he alive today. Mm-hmm. One's Ford's Theater, and the other one's the Republican Party.
It doesn't take much. Study
you think Abraham Lincoln wouldn't have been the very first subscriber to Netflix? Because I'm pretty sure he would have been.
And that's just. You know, the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party voted against the Civil Rights Act. They're still pulling that one out of their rear end, too. And even though it's been discussed ad nauseum, the Dixiecrats, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Southern strategy, hello, 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 yeah, they still beat that drum. They still do. You know, and that's the diehards. Well, the middle of the roaders, you know, they kind of, you hit them with that, and they kind of go, well, yeah, you're right. They at least admit defeat every now and then, even if they, you know, like a pool of water, it fills back in soon. You can get through to them here and there. And with that getting through of Mitt Romney talking all this smack is, wow, I really can't swallow that big bullshit pill. I don't think I'm voting this year. See, for us, we have the choice of Nick, I'm going to drill, and the oil price is going to come down, and the market's going to go up, and jobs are going to be 3%, you know, we're going to have 3% unemployment, and blah, blah, blah. All right, I'm sorry I took everyone into Wonka Nuts Land, but... I mean, that's not even Wonka's the good guy, but the other guy, what's the guy's name, Spud Rockers, or whatever his name is, that guy, Spud Fruckers. You know, that's Romney's land. It's a terrible, nightmarish kind of candy land where we're going to run out of oil and we're going to have Handmaid's Tale with, you know, women in red and the women no right to vote. I mean, that's the isn't that the direction that these guys are pointing to, right?
They are. They're antediluvian. I mean, they want to, yeah. They want to, you know, I mean, they've got, you know, what's her name, Anthrax Coulter. Says that it was a terrible mistake to ever give women the vote. You know, and they've got a woman who will say that. You know, and I guess she's got some god-awful book out now, so look for her to show up on Bill Maher and various places where she should never be allowed to even set foot flogging that thing.
Why won't Andy Kaufman die?
She is, isn't she?
Die. Please, Andy. Enough.
Stop.
Jim Carrey gave you the tribute. It's time to go. It's, you know, I mean, really, Ann Coulter slept with, for many years, Dinesh D'Souza. Have you seen Dinesh D'Souza?
Yes.
Come on now. Really? What? That's a joke. It's Andy Kaufman. That's Ann Coulter. There's no other way about it. No other way. Right? I mean, you know, he did have cancer. He probably, you know, I mean, I'm not saying he faked that, but, you know, he probably had so much radiation, he never could be able to grow hair again, and that's why it's got that little beanie, little rattlesnake skull. Oh, all that weight loss never can come back. All those fat cells are burned off. And then that's what it is. There's no way. And that's probably a big portion of the brain. But it's still to say he got stuck in a character. His original personality completely wiped, and they said...
Well, it's kind of like Smith, when you get stuck in a con, you kind of got to stay there.
Yeah, it's a sad thing, but it's time. I mean, please, Goddess, please, something with this. But actually, no, Goddess is right, because let her run her mouth. Go ahead, and go! Here's some beer, here's some scotch, go. Have some shots, go.
Yeah, pack them, carton of Marlboro Reds. Get with it, sis.
Open it up. Open those floodgates, because nobody's buying your bullshit. Nobody. Other than...
John Fox is in the chat room. He says, Coke makes you skinny. She racks up before each appearance.
No doubt. No, dude, balls of it. Balls and balls. She's just... No. She hides them in her Adam's apple.
Yeah, you apparently have struck a nerve we've struck a nerve by referencing the Marty said, D'Souza and Coulter, tell Albert thanks for the food I won't be eating because of him.
Sorry.
Well, we do that to people on this program. And then Sandra said, Ann Coulter, that bitch needs to keep the word blacks out her mouth. You know, because that, you know, she's on that again.
Of course. I mean, you know, she was honest in the very beginning. You know, I mean, I'm talking about this election cycle, right? What did she say? She called it. What's her famous words? We better elect Christie or we're going to have Romney and we're going to lose. And now, just like David Brooks does, she's trying to scramble whatever kind of, you know, scramble the pieces that are falling off this decrepit, disgusting Romney
boat
ship of hell. Yeah, this guy, man, oil production, really? That's your answer? Drill for oil, really? Really? Come on. Terahertz processors and oil and coal? Really? I mean, you guys need to watch some PBS or some, you know, just for, I know, before you can't cut it, before you cut the butt, just watch a couple of these science shows just once in a while. And if you like those, I got a couple others for you. And
so if only we could get Sir David Attenborough to...
Oh, goodness. Well, yeah, I don't, you know... I would love to see a sociological, just the documentaries in the next 5 years after this Republican just implosion, the next 5 years are going to be... documentary.
But are they really going to be in the wilderness? I mean, I get so many of these things, Albert. I get these pitches, these fundraising pitches, and I can't keep up with my email anymore because of all the fundraising pitches that I get. Let's see. Yeah, here it is.
Yeah.
Breaking: Boehner and the Republicans just launched a 26-day ad blitz against Democratic candidates in an effort to save their teetering House majority. Well, is their House majority really teetering? Yeah, donate $3 or more to fight these Republican attacks and elect the Democratic majority for President Obama.
Hmm. I tell you, bro, I mean, I don't have to give you money. You're getting my vote. And that's, you know, I mean, and you get me trying to tell other people to vote. You know, I wish I had Mitt Romney money. I wish I had $4 million to give to charity so I'd hit, or no, $2 million so I'd hit the 14%, you know, cause he disqualified himself, right? If he was to pay what he was legally required and nothing more, and if he did, then he wouldn't be qualified to be president, right? Right.
Yeah.
That's what he said, and that's why, you know, so if I had that kind of, $4 million to charity, Joe Biden gave, $700. Okay, but Joe Biden also probably shows up at places and does this and does that and does this, and he's probably one of these guys that, do you think Joe Biden realizes he's worth whatever he's worth? I don't know. He doesn't really strike me as that. He strikes me as a simple, like, he would love having schnitzel and macaroni and cheese with you, with a beer, right? That's a Joe Biden kind of guy. I mean,
Joe would have gone off in a rapture over that mac and cheese. And yeah, while we're at it, I'll put in a plug for the beer too, because it doesn't apparently escape the state lines of Wisconsin.
Yeah, we have that.
Nuglaris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had it on tap a couple of times. Spotted mm-hmm. Cow.
Mm-hmm. You like that one? Mm-hmm.
I like that one a whole bunch.
You gotta try with Enigma.
Okay.
That's a special one. It comes in 4 packs. And it has a red foil on the bottle.
Well, I tried it when I was there 2 years ago, you know, when we got to hook up for an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had it in a very relaxed setting during dinner on Saturday night. And previously that day, at the end of Fighting Bob Fest, well, there's this thing I found out about Wisconsin. And I don't mean to sound like Country Mouse Gone to the City or anything, but I am. The Friday night we went to watch the movie, and there was this keg of, I mean, they were just giving away beer in the corner of this little community meeting.
Awesome.
and I looked at one of my hosts, I looked at Karen, and I said, there's beer back there. And she said, well, of course there is. It's Wisconsin.
It's true.
We have beer at every meeting.
Yep, indeed. Liquid bread.
And, you know, I'm a little redneck boy. I mean, I grew up in a dry county. I mean, I can't imagine trying to explain dry county to somebody from Wisconsin.
Oh, well, the town I lived in, you visited me, and that was dry until I moved here.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I had a couple of glasses of Spotted Cow and just delighted in it because it had that little sour tartness to it that just, and I guess that's from the corn grits that they also use in the mash and or in the wort.
It's the krausening. It's like a type of age.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. And so I'm trying to figure out how to start some sort of I feel like Al Capone or something, trying to figure out how to. I mean, you remember Smokey and the Bandit? You know, because in east of the Mississippi, in the South, we used to get all head up about curs. You know, because it wasn't allowed to be distributed east of the Mississippi. So it spawned an entire movie about Burt Reynolds and Sally Field and Jerry Lee Lewis driving a semi-tractor trailer load of Coors beer trying to sneak it east of the Mississippi. I mean, Smokey and the Bandit was huge. Well, now I feel guilty. I'm trying to come up with some sort of Smokey and the Bandit scheme just to get some freaking Nuglaris beer, here to the hills and hollers of Appalachia. I mean, I'd put that Nuglaris stuff, I would put up against any beer on the planet.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff.
It's very good stuff.
what I like about them the most is they have a very wide variety. It's probably, you know, it's some of the varieties are seasonal, and others are, you know, constant. But the fat squirrel is a good one. The spotted cow is good. I mean, they're all good. They're all drinkable. Then they have the torts, which are the frambois like replicas. So this cheaper edition of frambois, and you know, actually led to of my son. And these kinds of things have magic potions, you know.
Yep.
But you know, where they take a beer, and I don't know if anybody knows what a frambois is. It's when you take beer and fruit.
Yeah, it's a very Belgian thing.
Yeah, it's a Belgian type thing, and they make those here. So, you know, those are really good too. I'm sure Agnes would really like that.
Well, I've still got a bottle of it that we brought back when we were in Minneapolis for Netroots Nation that has never been opened.
Get that in the fridge. What are you doing?
I figured I'd save it for the first snowfall or something.
I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see that. You know, I mean, it's. I don't know. What happens when we lose our polar ice cap and the northern hemisphere tips towards the sun? What happens? I mean, for all intents and purposes, Greenland is a bigger hunk of ice than the North Pole is.
Yeah.
So what happens when we lose this, what is that? Albedo. What happens when we lose that? You know, I've heard dummies say, oh, we can paint the roof white. I'm like, that's like getting a crack in your windshield and covering it with a garbage bag and duct tape and thinking that it's going to match. I don't know if it's going to work. It's a half-assed temporary solution. That's not the solution. The solution is to get the goddamn carbon out of the atmosphere. And we do have ways of doing that, especially when we have...
But we can't start getting it out until we stop putting it in.
True. But, you know, and even the guy, even the ExxonMobil CEO, see, this is the global warmer deniers, they're getting left out on the ice floe. They're going out, and it's melting, and it's getting smaller and smaller. Even the Exxon CEO, I mean, he's a dummy because he thinks we can adapt to, you know, the
yeah, we're just going to have to invade Canada to do it.
Yeah, well, you know. When the Midwest,
I mean, you know, the right wingers in this country want to build a 700-foot wall along the Rio Grande. I'm thinking the Canadians might want to start thinking about a wall along whatever that parallel is up there. You know, because you know we're just going to take our combine harvesters and drive them right over the border and keep. But I don't know how you plant wheat in tar sands.
Well, how are you going to plant wheat in tar sand scrape?
That's what I mean.
Think about bedrock. Yeah, I mean, it's not. I mean, and it's. It really
I mean, there's biblical parables about and he threw the seed onto stony soil and it would not take root, and the birds came and ate it. I mean, I mean, they're forever read. They talk about how they read that book. Don't they read that book?
I wish they would. I wish they would. I really do. Just once, please, or twice, please, just twice. If you say you believe it, you got to read it twice. So, you know, it's just so you can filter, oh, that's the really good part, and that part, that doesn't make any sense. You know, can't wait, two claws? What is that? That's stupid. Can't eat shellfish? Come on, man. Shrimps are delicious. Well, when shrimps had eyes, they were delicious. Now you can't eat shrimp, and
yeah,
no more tuna. And, you know, this is the world. I mean, I don't want Blade Runner world. I mean, that's where they're going. Replicants. We're going to have you a cat. Whoa, is that a real cat? No, it's a replicant. Hey, I mean, that's where we're going. Get out of here.
Yeah, and Edward James Olmos just sitting around folding, you know, folding matchsticks into pterodactyls.
That's because he was a replicant. Everyone was replicants.
Yeah, that's the takeaway, isn't it?
It's kind of getting there. I mean, and this is, burning, drilling for oil, fracking for gas. I mean, of course, everyone would have to be replicants. Who else can drink methane and all the fracking materials? Who else can process the mercury and the friggin' arsenic that's going to come out of the coal stacks? I mean, who's going to be able to process this? We're going to have to change the goddamn replicants. And if God help us if the friggin' programmers from Kolob are the ones programming us. Shit!
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, and see, that's the other thing. We're not going to get the geniuses from the Tyrell Corporation. We're going to get the coders from Kolob.
No coffee, no beer, no more sex.
No, but Pepsi and Coke are okay.
Oh, yeah, diet. Diet, caffeine-free. Oh, God.
Now, see, you started the debate. Marty just wrote in, Edward James Olmos was a human. Harrison Ford was a replicant.
Yeah, well, how do we know?
Yeah, I know. I know. Hey, Albert, this has been fun. We get all over the place, and we get into some extremely deep stuff, but we have a hell of a lot of fun along the way, and I sure do appreciate it.
All right, brother. Be good, man. We'll talk later.
All right, you take care. Right. Bye now. Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, earns it with every phone call. Andy, with a series of emails. Andy, the big winner from Friday night's Malloy podcast trivia, I might add. I heard Andy, I went, hey, it's Andy. And he said, last week, Chris Hedges was on a local radio show facing off against Dinesh D'Souza. It was a wonderful experience. Chris Hedges ripped him a new one, pinning him down, exposing lie after lie, slithering out of Dinesh's sorry-ass brain-dead mind. A wonderful listening experience. Well, if that's out there as a podcast, if you could tell us who the guy was, I'm sure people would love to hear that. He also notes, in response to what Albert was talking about, being the Romney bot being the father of outsourcing, he said, how about Mitt Raw Money's $77,000 investments in China's state-owned oil company CNOOC Limited and Industry and Commercial Bank of China in 2009 and 2010? It came out in the 14% effective tax rate 2011 returns released on Friday night. Concerning your conversation with Wisconsin Bucky Badger Albert, he not only outsources to China, by God, he invests in the country, too. And I'm sure he gets a tax break in the U.S. for it as well. Andy also said, going back to what David was talking about earlier, my thoughts exactly, David, exactly. They want it all. They want it all. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When the top tax bracket was 94% for almost 20 years from 1940 to 1960, after the first $200,000, sure they pay too much. My arse. They don't contribute to our society. That's the problem with the rich. The KB Toys was purchased by Bain and went bankrupt because of all the debt they were shackled with. Another Bain success story. Andy's mighty sharp. And then going all the way back to the beatings in Texas story, he says, another reason to hate the state of Texas. If I were that girl's father or brother, they would have to tear me off of the criminals who perpetrated this assault, an act of torture, because that's what it was. Texas is a medieval place. In a court of law, I would never convict a relative of that poor girl for beating that assistant principal into dog meat. You got it, Bob. These were pig-licking freaks. They believe that health care is only for the wealthy, only for those who can pay, not a right for all citizens to promote the general welfare of the citizenry, as it is on the rest of the developed and modern OECD world. Again, we are in a medieval feudal society. What happens when we get a pandemic and 50 million of the uninsured put the rest of the nation at risk? Will the repiglicans just shoot us so we don't spread the virus? As you said, ex-rep Alan Grayson's words ring true. The repiglicans' health care plan, don't get sick. If you do, die quickly. And as I mentioned, you know, when I read stuff, I tell you what I'm reading, and because I can't just sit around reading news all day. I sometimes have to read stuff that bums me out from a different century. And Andy's query about what happens when a pandemic comes along and takes out 50 million people, well, it's possible. Or maybe it's not plague. Maybe it's some sort of Monsanto-generated famine. Possible? Yeah, more than possible. So what happens when, or maybe the two happen together? You want to know what happens when one-third of the population goes pining for the fjords? Because it's there in history for you to find out. Everything collapsed in the 14th century. Every social structure collapsed. The church collapsed. The reason that you have the objections to the excesses of the church leading to the Reformation is because it proved itself tissue paper thin and utterly fraudulent. You had priests who refused to go and administer extreme unction to people who were dying of the plague because they did not want to die too. And while they didn't understand disease process or infection or how the
how the plague was transmitted, they noticed that people who got near people who had the plague got dead. The Pope at the time was at Avignon and was told to stay in his chambers, keep a roaring fire going, and then, here's the important part, anybody who came into the presence wasn't allowed literally within 40 feet, within two lance lengths of His Holiness, who survived. But the church fell apart, the economy fell apart. Consider that the land that had been feudally owned, that had been worked by peasants who died in the plague, was left fallow. That meant that foodstuff prices went roaring through the roof, and the 1% no longer had their vassals and serfs to whip, and were compelled to grant free community status to a variety of cities. But even then, they were still so wrapped up in their own excesses that, among other things, the French crown, for instance, kept imposing ridiculous taxes to support ridiculous wars. Go and read about the rebellion of the Jacquerie. Here, let me ruin it for you. The rebellion of the Jacquerie was slaughtered almost to the last man, because the 1% still had all the weapons for doing all the killing. Now, they would, later on, in various and sundry dust-ups and tilts, manage to kill themselves off pretty good. I think it was in Friday Night's show that there was some mention of the Battle of Nicopolis, the last great crusade, in which the geniuses, the French flower of chivalry, insisted in riding their horses out in front of the infantry. That didn't work out. But out of the grim horrors of the plague, you get the economic forces that lead to the rise of the Renaissance. So Andy's question is well put. What happens if there are if a bunch of us who are out there slogging away for the benefit of our 1% betters, what happens if we can't? You think, I mentioned the lobster glut a few minutes ago. Do you think for an instant that that Bishop Willard is going to get on a boat with the lobster pots and go out and catch some? No, he won't. You know, these horses' rear ends are fascinated with Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, and how the so-called producers go on strike against the moochers and go to some sort of hideaway where they go back to a gold standard coinage in a holler in Colorado. But there's no if working people talk about withholding their labor, oh hell no. Oh hell no. How far do you think Rahm Emanuel was from sicking the dogs on the teachers in Chicago, or fire hoses, or an injunction? It's always been the way. You go to court because you own the judicial system, and you get the court to declare the strike illegal, and then you start rounding up the leadership until the proles get back to work. And it doesn't matter if the proles happen to be harvesting barley, or teaching our kids. By the way, a big agreement coming from Patty. She sent the download link for the KPF Key Hedges D'Souza discussion. She said, I listened to it last night. It was great. Wow. So my best suggestion would be to go to KPFK.org, then look under programs, program highlights. Just look for Chris Hedges and Dinesh D'Souza. The name of the program is, and there's a bunch of hyphens, Chris Hedges, Dinesh D'Souza on Uprising, September 18th, 8 a.m. Yeah.
Philip wrote in, following our conversation about Ann Coulter. He said, do any Horn listeners know which right-wing male pundit Ann Coulter was before the trip to Thailand and the implants? As for me, I'm requesting an ethnicity transplant from my HMO. Kennedy, the Berrigan brothers, Michael Harrington, the rest of the Kennedy brothers made me somewhat positive about being Irish-American and the contributions of our folks to the politics of this country. But frankly, with Ann Coulter, Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, Sean Hannity, John McLaughlin, and other reactionary Irish-American pundits dominating the airwaves for the past decade or so, I'm thinking that becoming Uzbek might be the way to go. I know. I know. Speaking of O'Reilly and polluting the airwaves, Isaac sent this clip along to me, and it really does deserve to be heard. This was posted on September 21st, Friday. You ever notice, I mean, I'm just, there's not really any, you ever notice that O'Reilly gets that sort of chin up in the air, kind of smug, Il Duce look about him every now and then? This is 2 minutes and 42 seconds of O'Reilly just getting schooled. But there's something about that. There is still something to object to in what Koppel says. I bet you can. I bet you'll know what it is the minute you hear it.
Okay, but there's a big difference between Fox News and MSNBC. Well, you know what that difference is?
Tell me.
No, but do you know what it is?
I'm asking you. What do you think it
is? So you concede you don't know what it is?
I don't know what it is. No.
We actually do hard news here from 9 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
8 hours of hard news.
Right.
All right? MSNBC doesn't do 1 hour of hard news. It's all let's push the liberal democratic agenda from sign on to sign off. So this is a news...
Really? I mean, I don't want to step on Mr. Koppel's toes or anything, but really, MSNBC does nothing but push the liberal democratic agenda? I don't know. Maybe Dr. Falafel here isn't out of his footy pajamas at that hour of the morning, but I've watched Morning Joe, and if that's pushing the Democratic agenda, well, I'm an Elvis helmet wearing Martian. And then there's one other thing. MSNBC is a subgroup of NBC. NBC News people work on MSNBC, vice versa, yada yada. So there's an entire NBC News division that does so-called hard news, but, you know, it's all for-profit media, so please. Kudos going out, by the way, to Up With Chris Hayes for making mention of mountaintop removal this past Saturday. That was inspiring. Now we just got to clue Chris into the AIC Act and let him know that there's a way to end this. But anyway, so that I just had to throw that out there for general consideration. Let's let Il Duce pontificate.
It's agency here, Fox.
I don't think anyone is going to be confused as to the ideological belief of most of the people who appear on Fox.
I think that's grossly unfair to the hard news reporters, okay?
I mean, Bill, what is it you think that I have said about the network or written about the network?
You think that we've corrupted the sanctity of fair news coverage.
I think...
That's what I think.
I think that I...
And see, if only you could see the video. It's on YouTube. Ted Koppel, Fox News... apostrophe, bad for America, close apostrophe. They're not quotes, they're apostrophes. And it pulls back to a wide shot, and when Dr. Falafel says, that's what I think, he does that Il Duce head nod. This guy's a fascist. They can't help it. But anyway, back to it.
Ideological coverage of the news, be it of the right or be it of the left, has created a political reality in this country which is bad for America.
And there you have it. Did you notice that? Let's go back and try to get it all. Here.
Illogical coverage.
Did the sanctity of fair news coverage.
I think that ideological coverage of the news, be it of the right or be it of the left, has created...
Where, Ted? Where's the ideological coverage of the news, be it of the right or of the left? ABC ain't giving us no left news. And you know what? Neither is NBC. So quit with the dumbass fake duality. It's all for-profit media. Every last bit of it is filtered and gate-kept and protected to make sure that, you know, the lumpen proletariat out here doesn't get any wild freaking ideas about single-payer health care or not poisoning little hillbilly babies in the womb. Of the left or of the right. Where's the left? What left? But this is worth it just to see the spanking that comes at the end.
A political reality in this country which is bad for America. I think it's made it difficult, if not impossible, for decent men and women in Congress, on Capitol Hill, to reach across the aisle and find compromise. And if we can't do that, Bill, we're going to be in the... And we have been, I think, for the last few years, in a terrible situation in this country where politically we can't make deals anymore.
You can't be on top for as long as the Fox News channel has been on top and sell a product that's inferior or dishonest. It's impossible in this country. So therefore, I want you to...
Your Honor, I object. He's assuming facts, not in evidence. Or he's just lying. I'm not sure which. Probably just lying. It's O'Reilly, after all. You can't... What?
Have been, I think, for the last few years, in a terrible situation in this country where politically we can't make deals anymore.
You can't be on top for as long as the Fox News channel has been on top and sell a product that's inferior or dishonest.
Yes, that's how you get to the top
well,
in America.
Howdy.
Where in the hell did that come from? Oh, turn off Mr. Speaker. Yeah, howdy, Bob. They got on. It's not a news organization. It's a damn brand name. They've admitted as much in court. They're entertainment, not news. But you see, they say that for their knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing viewers. Yeah, we're watching the best news. It's a high-quality product, Marvelline. Yeah.
It's impossible in this country. So therefore, I want you to reevaluate our network, watch it a little bit more, and then we'll talk in about a year. The last word.
The last word is, how many people are watching the Fox network at 10 o'clock in the morning, or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
You know what? We've got a pretty good idea because of those Fox MSNBC numbers from last week. For two nights running, and I mentioned this on the program Friday night, MSNBC beat O'Reilly, 576,000 viewers aged 25 to 54 to 525,000. That is, taken together, those two viewerships amount to a little bit over 1/330th. Okay? 1/3 of 1%. Of the population of the United States. There were more people watching SpongeBob. More people watching Here Comes Honey Boo Boo Child. Okay? I think that has to be taken into account. So, that's during Fox's primetime hours. Koppel's point is well taken and well made. How many people in that same 25 to 54 demographic are watching at 10 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon? Here's a hint. SpongeBob is whipping their ass sideways.
Roughly.
I don't know how many people.
Well, you should. You work for the organization.
You know, we have millions of people watching us sign off to sign on.
Yeah.
Millions of people watching us sign off to sign on. Well, they never sign off, and they don't sign on. What does that tell you?
But you do not have millions of people watching at 10 in the morning, or noon, or 1 in the afternoon. The millions of people are watching you, Bill.
No, they're not, Ted. Half a million. Tops. At least in the demographic that the marketing people care about. Now, the folks from 55 to dead, and I don't know what the demographic is for that under 24. I can't imagine that. You see my point?
And the they're millions, better for it.
The millions of people are watching those of you with a particular point of view. So
that's the way the country works. That's the free marketplace.
No, it isn't. That is not the free marketplace, and it's not the way the country works. That is the way manipulated media work. Why are people going to, you know, the real loser in all of this is CNN. CNN used to be a respected cable news operation. But they started trying to follow the Fox model instead of realizing, and I guess they're making an attempt now, but, you know, how much of an attempt can you make when your star anchors are Wolf Blitzer and Candy Crowley, Dana Loesch, Leach, whatever, at being objective journalists? Fail! Why are people going to watch an imitation of Fox when they can just watch Fox? See the 2010 elections in which the Blue Dogs lost their asses. Why are people going to vote for an imitation Republican when they can just vote for a wild-eyed freak and have done with it?
Marketplace, and I'm perfectly content to leave it on that note. It's a business, and it's operating as a business. And once upon a time, you and I actually thought journalism was a calling.
But I still think that I'm doing something noble.
And that's the thing I can't translate. I can't translate that from video to radio. And I still think I'm doing something noble. And Koppel just looks at O'Reilly and blows him a kiss. He went screaming all the way back to the green room, I'll bet. Effing sucks! Right? Yeah. For-profit media. Because, you know, let's not pretend that Ted Koppel is an unbiased journalist. Because I don't recall any of that. I just don't. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I am A, unbiased, or B, a journalist. I've been a journalist. I'm not one now. I know how to do it. I can do it if need be. But in a world where media is driven by profits, all we can say here is that we're saying what we think, and we're thinking what we think based upon facts as we understand them, and that we're trying to do it without putting obscene profits at the front end. Which leads me basically to tonight's close. I will tell you happily that half of the $100 we need to complete September's fundraising came in this evening. Thank you very kindly. It is profoundly appreciated. If the other 50 comes in, we will have beaten the Swede, and we will have done so between now and tomorrow. We will have done so 5 days ahead of month's end, and that has not happened in a long time. And you will not hear fundraising word number one out of me until October 1. So, there you go. That's how we will keep this little thing happening. October, we will have. In October, we will start working on November. Maybe someday we'll have enough of a cushion to say that in October we'll be working on December, or in November we'll be working on January, but right now we don't. But thanks to all of you who have made this likely, because these are the hardest times the Horn has ever been through, simply put. Thank you for all your ideas. Thank you for your calls. Thank you for your emails. Thank you for sitting and listening and sharing later. Thank you for everything you do to make this little experiment, at least by your own estimation, worth the effort. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox for all that he does. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, for 10 years saving liberal progressive radio on the Internet and never sending a bill. WhiteRoseSociety.org. As ever, thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. Go to ACACT.org and learn how you can be part of the end of Appalachia's agony by advocating on behalf of the ACACT in the Congress of the United States to your elected representative. And go to CRMW.net and get the coolest t-shirt in America. Save the endangered hillbilly. It's cheap, and it will be a conversation starter that can lead to all kinds of advocacy for justice in this tormented region of the country. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.